Hello and welcome to the first front page of 2024. Over the next 30 minutes and the next 12 months, we'll be bringing you all the biggest stories in horse racing, along with debate and insight from the Racing Post team of industry-leading experts. Kicking us off in the new year, I have in the studio James Stevens, West Country correspondent. How are you, James?
Yeah, very good. Looking forward to this afternoon's, this morning show even. Lots to go over and busy Christmas full of top-class racing, wasn't there? So, yeah, good. Lots to talk about.
Certainly is. And calling in from his sprawling mansion in the fens of East Anglia, it's Deputy Industry Editor Peter Scargill. Hello, Pete.
Good morning, Tom. Yes, coming to you in widescreen. It was an indulgent Christmas.
Excellent. Good to hear. And welcome to you, our viewers. Ahead of us today, we've got a packed show. We're going to be talking about the launch of Premier Racing. And we will be discussing a recent series in the Racing Post, looking at the bucket list destinations for racing fans and lots more beside. We're going to get started, though, with the launch of Premier Racing, the new dawn for British horse racing. This, of course, is the initiative that has seen 170 fixtures badged as premier fixtures, no longer mere racing fixtures. There's a logo, there are a few advertising hoardings, and there's been some prize money increases. But I think it's fair to say that the launch has been fairly low-key, Pete. Marks out of 10 for Premier Racing so far?
Marks out of 10 for execution, quite low. I'd say under 5 for execution. Is that mean?
Under 5.
Mean it's January.
Yeah. Is that 4 or 0? It's quite.
Okay. All right. It's going to be that sort of day, is it? Specific sort of day. Fine. Yeah. I'm going to go for 3.
Okay.
Yeah, right in the middle. There we are. But the idea behind it and the premise behind it and what they want to do, and obviously the prize money, I would go above 5, maybe like a 6 or a 7. But it's just, it's muddled and it's cluttered and you can't help feel that it's just been rushed in before anyone quite knows what they're doing. I've not been to a Premier race day, unfortunately, but I know that James has been, so he might have a different experience from the ground. But in terms of a television viewer, which is what I've been so far, it's wanting to be something, but it isn't really anything yet.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the nature of the introduction has more than a little bit of last minute syndrome about it, a sense that perhaps despite having a year or so to build up to the launch of Premier Racing, when it actually launched, most of the ideas, most of the initiatives, most of the branding, most of the enhancements were not actually in place. Pete, do we think that's, you know, is that a failure by the sport, or is that just, you know, the nature of these things and given time, it will take on more of a defined shape?
Yeah, it's a bit like my Christmas shopping, isn't it? You know, you have the whole year, you know when Christmas is, and then you're there on with all the other husbands on Christmas Eve going, I wonder if this thing from the supermarket would work. So, look, we all knew that this was coming in, and the people who've spoken about it so far have said, well, look, we had to get the fixture list done, and that was important. And then by the time that was all run out, we didn't have really time to do anything, so it was a soft launch and it'll all be fine and we're all trying very hard, which I'm sure they are. But it comes back to the issue of the customer, doesn't it? So it's all been rushed out and there's like a facade that something's new and we all have to get excited about this, so come on, it's new, let's get excited because it's Premier Racing. But we're all going, a bit more prize money, but what else is there? And that's what's lacking. What's lacking is what we're really meant to be getting out of it. So yeah, there is a failure. There are some mitigating factors, but I would be sure come maybe April, May kind of time, things will be clicking a bit more. Now, the problem is this is a 2-year trial. And if you've lost 3 or 4 months, how accurate is your data? This is the difficulty we're in, isn't it? But look, we all want Premier Racing to work, however cynical and negative and miserable we all want to be, because in the end, the idea behind it is to grow the sport, isn't it? We all want a more prosperous sport. We all want better prize money and more horses in training and competitive racing. So we want it to work, but we can't just blindly go in and say, oh, this is great, this is brilliant, oh, all these horses that are racing in 3 and 4 runner races on New Year's Day is amazing. All these innovations that are being put forward on ITV are amazing, because they won't, but that shouldn't stop people trying, and I'm sure it will get better, but it needs to be.
James, you were at Cheltenham on New Year's Day, one of the most popular meetings of the year. What was your impression of it, and did the Premier element really register in any meaningful way?
In all honesty, no. They described it as a soft launch. I think it's as soft as Tyson Fury would find a punch from me, to be honest with you. We noticed two very small advertisement boards on the other side of the track, which from the press room, which is in the main stand, you could really struggle to see. You could just about make out the gold branding. There was a mention of it in the logo. It's interesting you ask Pete about a number, because I found it quite interesting to notice that the logo has got 3 stars, which doesn't quite make sense to me when we're not advertising a 5-star product. So didn't quite get that. And there were messages on the screen, but other than that, it didn't seem noticeable. It didn't seem any different. And Pete touches on this being a trial, and I think that New Year's Day at Cheltenham was possibly the best opportunity this scheme could have got as a trial. It's a huge day for walk-ups. I think it's probably the biggest day of the year for walk-ups. A lot of people will wake up on New Year's Day, see how their heads are, and if they feel all right, they'll go racing. And it's not a crowd it's not a particular Cheltenham crowds. Different meetings get different crowds, and New Year's Day is not one that typically go racing. It's people who have a bank holiday, a day off, and so they would have been really interesting to see what they thought of Premier Racing. So it was a bit of a missed opportunity. I was reading Peter Saville in the paper today, who said Monday's newspapers talking about Premier Racing, comparing it to football. I felt this was a bit like a charity shield, really. It just didn't quite have that same spark, as a bit flat, but I hope this goes well. It's a brilliant idea. It's a sensible idea, because it is basically saying if you're not already involved in racing, these are the days to look at. These are the key moments. It's almost a sort of quick guide to the fixture list, and it makes sense. But it just needs to be executed better, because as it stands, it doesn't feel much different, and the trial isn't quite going to have the same results as we would want.
Well, speaking of Peter Saville, he's of course the top dog at Plumpton Racecourse, and Plumpton hosted the second Premier meeting of 2024 on Sunday. Obviously, Sandown's meeting on Saturday cancelled. I think it's fair to say that the reception for the racing at Plumpton was much stronger. There was some very positive responses to the extra prize money they invested. The field sizes weren't amazing, but they were solid. And they got, by all accounts, a very good crowd as well. And it's not surprising that Plumpton were sort of big backers of Premier Racing, because Peter Saville, of course, was the person behind the original idea that became Premier Racing. But perhaps this is more sort of indicative of where Premier Racing can make an impact, because Cheltenham on New Year's Day probably doesn't really need any help. Now, if you can draw an extra 5,000 people to it, 10,000 people to it, then absolutely fantastic. But what the challenge is really is, how do you take those meetings, which are a couple of tiers down the sort of pecking order, and help people, the casual fans you were mentioning, understand that they're worth paying attention to? And for Plumpton, that's a two-way thing, because they're simultaneously hopefully bringing in fans and betting interest with the Premier branding and the quality of racing, but they're also investing in their racing to secure that Premier status, which in turn makes the racing more appealing and hopefully more competitive. So it's at that level that we hope Premier Racing will have an impact, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key about that card is the prize money was very good, and that attracts the big names, jockeys, the big name trainers. So people who you're familiar with are in attendance, which always grows the appeal. And as well, the seniors hurdle, one of the races, the story of the day, really, it turned out to be, with that remarkable recovery by Johansson. But that had familiar names in it. Lots of horses that we already know. And that's a good draw. That's a good addition to it. You know, that prize money, £195,000, the record card. You're right, it drags people in. And it's not just people outside of racing. It's people who would normally not look at a Plumpton card on a Sunday, and suddenly they're looking at it going, well, I might not necessarily want to go to it because I might live too hard, but I certainly want to have a bet on it. I certainly want to look at it in more detail. So there are lots of different ways. You're right, Cheltenham New Year's Day will always get a big crowd just because of the nature of Cheltenham and where it is in the yearbook. But It's certainly a good start, and I think Plumpton delivered on it, and I would just hope that the momentum builds off that, and the smaller tracks can look at Plumpton and see, well, look, that looked to go really well for them. What can we do? As you say, crowd up 40%, so can't knock that.
The most controversial aspect of the weekend, though, was probably the Wolverhampton evening meeting trial, a six-meeting trial of Sunday evening all-weather racing. Apparently, it's a major betting opportunity, so a big opportunity for the sport to bring in more money. Fair to say, though, reception from within racing is frosty.
Yeah, I watched the interview yesterday of the first race, and Callum Shepherd said, well, it was great to win, but I don't particularly want to be here. And people, the momentum of the day was people didn't quite have the same buzz for it. There was good prize money on offer, so it was a good opportunity, but the concept of racing on a Sunday in the evening just hasn't quite struck yet.
Except with the racecourse. The racecourse quoted all seemed to be very positive about it, which you might expect given they're paying money to be there. But if punters at home are giving it a similar reception,
well, this is the thing.
Is it not just a no-brainer? Like the sport needs to find a way to make it happen, otherwise accept that prize money is going to be lower.
Well, I think the key is we had in the Sunday series as well. Well, that was last year, and that's been an interesting part of the fixture list. I think the key with Sunday racing is that it's all well and good going into it with this preconception of this isn't going to be very good, this isn't what we want. But actually it's a trial, and you have to treat it as that, because we don't know really without trying that this could really bring in lots of money. This could be really popular. This could be a part of the weekend, a clustered week of sport, where actually people go, you know what, off a Sunday night, I might want to watch the racing. We don't know that unless we try it. You don't know anything unless you try it. So as much as me personally, would I want to sit down on Sunday evening and watch racing? No. But then again, I've never done it, so how would I know? So I think you've got to give it openness, because, as you say, if there's good prize money on offer and the racing quality and people seem to warm to it, then it's something to consider. But you have to go into it with openness, because otherwise there's no point trialling anything and things are just going to go in a circle. And look, the sport isn't particularly thriving at the minute. We were over problems. So to give it a trial and give it a proper go, I think that's the way forward. But yes, it wasn't met with the best start. But we'll see what happens over the next few weeks.
And Pete, final word with you. Sunday evening, yay or nay?
Well, I think James's point that it's a trial means that we have to go into it with an open mind. Now, would I want to be going to Wolverhampton on a Sunday evening? Would I want to have a runner at Wolverhampton on a Sunday evening? No, even for the extra prize money. But I'm a miserable old man who takes little joy in a few things. Apart from Joe Anderson's ride, I have to say, going back to that quickly, that was brilliant. And had my daughter trying to imitate it on the edge of the sofa, which was quite good. Interestingly, so basically, as we said, the Sunday evening element comes down to betting, doesn't it? In the end, that's the key thing. And it's tempting the participants in to contribute to try and make the betting. So Richard Wayman was interviewed on Sky Sports Racing. He talked about the metrics they've set out, one of which is they want betting to be 15 to 20% higher than it would be for an equivalent card on a sort of midweek card, I think he said. Chris Paul, who worked for BetVictor, he tweeted or yexed, I don't know what the right term is now, saying that their turnover and betting levels were on a par for the early races as they had been for Wolverhampton's meeting on Friday. So whether you're just capturing the same people who would normally bet on a Wolverhampton race, they're going to bet on a Sunday evening, perhaps that's an early indicator. This is obviously a very limited sample set, isn't it? But what racing wants to do is bring in more people, new people, people who would not be betting or would be betting on other things. If they're just having the same people betting, who would normally bet on those kind of races, but they're betting on a Sunday evening, you worry that it's probably not going to be enough of a temptation for the sport to carry on, particularly given the participants in particular are very against it, albeit, as you quite rightly said, Tom, the racegoers and indeed the stable staff who were interviewed by Jack Haynes at Wolverhampton were quite pro it. So, you know, it's never straightforward, is it?
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Pete. We will be back in just a minute after this advert for our free bets page. Welcome back. We are barely 2 months away from the Cheltenham Festival now, and the countdown got a little bit more tense last week as we got the major entry stage, including entries for the Gold Cup. The key talking point about that was that the entries for the Gold Cup, for the season's most prestigious 3 mile plus chase, were down year on year. In fact, they were at a record low. James, not a great sight to see, and indeed I think if you were going to delve a little deeper, you'd also say that the British Challenge is particularly weak this year.
Yeah, I think there's a number of issues that are concerning in the sport at the minute, and I think the amount and number of top quality horses around is probably the one that gets me the most, because we are seeing serious decreases in these big races, and this should be a time where Cheltenham is just round the corner. It should be a time for excitement, but again, it's another story we're looking at, scratching heads going, okay, how can you challenge this? So just to put the numbers in, 20 in the Gold Cup, 20 horses entered, was as high as 43 in 2019, and it dropped below 30 for the first time last year. The average in the years before that were 33, so a significant decrease. And I think the number here I've got, which really strikes how serious a concern this is the number of horses entered. A lot of them have multiple entries. So the overall horses entered in either the Gold Cup, the Ryanair or the Champion Chase is 57. In 2019, that was 77. So that's a 26% drop of horses that are considered good enough to run in the three flagship chases.
What do we attribute that to?
I think there's a number of different parts at play here. I think first and foremost, you've got the powerhouses yards. And I think the concept that we keep going back to is that if you've got Willie Mullins has got the favourite for all three of those races, his owners and the other horses he's got in the yard, they may know necessarily that they could run in different races and run in handicaps, they can go away from him. Because that power is congested, it means they don't all have to go for those bigger races. I mean, you can look at the Gold Cup and say, well, you know, we're taking a Willie Mullins in Gallop and Deschamps, maybe let's look elsewhere. Because he's got that power in such small hands, it means you're having to campaign them a bit differently. That's one of the key ones. And there's just not as many good horses about, whether that's horses being sold abroad from the flat when they could have gone over jumps. There's lots of different parts to it. And also maybe there's a lack of owners as well, who are big spending owners that are dropping out. So there's lots of different things. And I think the problem is with those entries that came out this week is it just really highlights all the problems, all the areas that are worrying. Because the fact is, we talk about Premier Racing there, this is the key product. The Cheltenham Festival, the Gold Cup, this is as good as it gets. And it should be as good as it gets. And seeing it decrease and the amount of runners decrease, it shows us there's serious problems in the sport.
What did you think of Chris Cook's column where he sort of, in mock exasperation, said, Shishkin, is this really the best Britain can do for the Gold Cup?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he is. Look, it's obviously a concern. I'm in the camp that if he had jumped fluently at Kempton and got through, he would have won, so it might not have been as significant. But it shows how weak British racing is. You mentioned there about the power of strength of Irish, and we've seen the domination. I mean, this season it's not been... I don't go into it thinking they're going to be as dominant as they were with some of the novice racing and stuff. So I've got half a consideration that we might just battle back a bit. I know, quote me when I'm wrong. I'm ready for it. But yeah, it's a huge concern when you're looking at a Gold Cup and it's, you know, it's a 9-1 outsider is Britain's best. But these things happen and there'll be horses that come through. It is a cycle. Paul Nicholls, Nick Henson, they've all said it's a cycle, and I think it will change. But I mean, Shishkin is a funny one though, isn't it? It's such an enigmatic horse. It'd be an amazing story if he was to win it.
It would be an incredible story. No man would be better at that than Nicky Henderson. I guess the point is he's a mercurial old rogue in some respects, and on his day he can certainly mix it with the very best, but you never quite know when his day is going to be.
Yeah, I suppose the other thing you could look back on and say, well, of course it is a sign. The last two winners of the Brown Advisory, which is the sort of the key trial year on year, Le Homme Press is still in training, but we've not seen him since December 22, and the Real Wacker just hasn't been the same horse this season. So maybe it's a little bit of his exaggeration. It's just circumstances and these things play out. But Yeah, interesting. And it seems like it's pretty straightforward. He's going to win anyway with Gallop and Schum after Christmas. So.
Well, indeed. And Pete, I wanted to talk to you about this because what we have at the Cheltenham Festival this year is, compared to last year, more competitive markets. But in the five championship races, perhaps not so, because we've got Gallop and Deschamps just about odds against for the Gold Cup. We have El Fabiolo evens for the Champion Chase. Constitution Hill, of course, long odds on for the Champion Hurdle. And then slightly more competitive markets for the Ryanair and Stayers. What does this tell you? Is this just chance that it happens to be the case that this year the biggest races, what should be the most competitive races, are some of the least competitive? Or is this indicative of the sort of trend towards powerhouse yards and the monopolisation of power in small ownership or training strings?
Yeah, the horses aren't there, Tom. It's as simple as that. So I've got some numbers, go alongside James's. There were 5,594 horses, jumps horses in training, listed in training in Britain in December last month. That is a drop year on year of 5.5%. Right? So there's fewer jumps horses about to begin with. And then if you look at the horses rated 151 plus, which is the top level, you know, the races we're talking about, there were 46 such horses listed in training in Britain in December. Now, I appreciate that's in training. Horses might have come out of training for whatever reason, but, you know, that's probably a pretty good guide. In 2020, there were 95 such horses. The horses aren't there. So, you know, these horses aren't there in Britain to compete. And we know that Mr. Elliott and Mr. de Bromhead have quite a lot of them. So, and they have exceptional horses. For whatever reason, they're able to source these horses and bring them through. That's why we're not competing. And then when we do have an exceptional horse like Constitution Hill, obviously he goes and dominates the market. So I did look through the betting markets very briefly to try and look for some hope, saying, well, look, the strong Irish representatives even in the biggest races, but look at all these horses we've got coming through. But, well, it wasn't as pretty as I thought it was. You got Constitution Hill and then Burdett Road and the Triumph Hurdle doing quite a lot of heavy lifting for Bristol. So I might be the first person to throw back James's "we're going to be competitive" comment in his face.
Excellent. I love it. 5.5% decline year on year of jumps horse and training. That's a big drop.
Yeah, and look, there's reasons for this, isn't there? That, you know, there could be simple things like horses getting injured. But, you know, we've had a drop in the number of trainers and we've had a drop in owners. We all know the issues around cost of living and stuff. You know, it's having a racehorse is an indulgence and it's a dream that you do as an extra. You don't have to have a horse in training, despite what I might try and tell you if I'm trying to sell you a horse. So it's inevitable there's going to be a drop off. And this is what premierisation needs to be trying to address, isn't it? It needs to be trying to bring these horses back up and keep these horses in training. And, you know, that's why, to go back to the earlier point, it's frustrating to see it start in such a slow way, because the numbers are ringing out in an alarming fashion, aren't they? I mean, anyone would say that sort of drop off within 12 months, whatever the mitigating factors might be, isn't particularly healthy.
Mm. No, thank you, Pete. I think that's a number we will certainly be returning to in the weeks and months to come. If you're trying to make sense of the Cheltenham Antipost markets, there is no finer man to turn to for advice than the Racing Post's own Pricewise, Tom Segal. His Antipost Pricewise festival tipping series over the last 5 years has been in profit every single year, shows a total return of 176 ROI, and it begins today, Monday, at 6 p.m. for Members Club Ultimate subscribers online, and in Tuesday's newspaper in the Racing Post and all good news agents. So do have a look out for that if you want to sign up for Members Club Ultimate, which offers a host of insights, tools and top class journalism and advice. There is a special offer running right now, and we will put details of that in the description. We are going to finish, though, with a look back at a fantastic series that ran in the Racing Post last week. It was called the Ultimate Racing Bucket List. And if anyone out there, like me, is now looking ahead to 2024 and thinking about where they can go on holiday and how they might be able to snaffle in a secret racing element to that, it was compulsory reading over three different editions. We looked at the best racing experiences in Britain, Ireland, and overseas. James, what was the best racing trip you've ever done?
The best racing trip I've done, I would probably say, I feel I have to go abroad, because if I, as much as I'd love to bang on the West Country, I don't think I can sell Taunton here or Wincanton.
You could try.
I could try, but I'm not. The one that was, I don't think I remember reading it, but it probably was on there, and I've just seen it, was Galway. Oh, Galway was fantastic.
Galway was it? Galway, absolutely. They did all 7 days.
That's
at
it.
Galway,
I did read that. I'm
which
right.
I did. Yeah. I did read, and I thought, you know, are we trying to kill people here?
Yeah,
you know?
I certainly wouldn't recommend that. That should come with a health hazard.
I did. I did all 7 days at Galway, and when I told people in Galway I was there for all 7 days, they looked at me like I was a complete and utter lunatic, which I was, because nobody does 7 days. It's too much.
No, it's a great meeting. I think what it incorporates is it's jumps racing where the weather's not horrible and cold, not all the time.
West coast of Ireland in summer is still.
Listen, I go to a lot of cold meetings. That's summer weather for me. Good fun. Lots of going on around the course, music in between races, just good fun vibes, very good. I was also thinking about it, was quite a lot of international ones. The weirdest place I've been racing is Nicosia Race Club in Cyprus.
Love it.
Beautiful backdrop, bit random. The quality of race wasn't particularly good, and it gives me one of the weirdest moments of my life when I was in this sort of betting shop and a huge amount of locals huddled around, and I thought, oh God, there must be some shrewdy here. Might have a bit of a Barney Curley of Cyprus or something like that. And they huddled around watching about the 2:10 at Fakenham. And yes. They loved it.
Love
so,
it.
I
got that. I was in Naples a few years back and popped into a betting shop. I always like to see what betting shops are like overseas. And a bunch of Sicilian gentlemen going absolutely mad at racing from Musselburgh, which I just thought was absolutely fantastic. Great to see that British racing appreciated around the globe.
Yeah, and I think, look, we're probably all a bit cynical, but when you go abroad and see some of these tracks, a lot of them are sort of oval tracks, which are a bit like each other, especially in America and countries like that. So you do go away and you come back to our race courses and every race course is so different. When you look at Plumpton yesterday, I mean, what a unique track. It's alien to other places. So it makes us appreciate what we have sometimes as well. Top of my list of my bucket list, though, is Japan and Japan Cup. I'm just fascinated.
You'd like to do, you haven't been.
Yeah, not done yet, but I'd love to do it. I'd love to see how it works over there, the training bases, the real sort of how the locals react with it and the sort of celebrity vibe that they create for their racing. It's something that really fascinates me. So that's top of my list.
Fantastic. I recommended the Palio di Siena. I recognise I just called people from Naples Sicilian there, which might preclude me going back to Italy at this rate. But racing in Italy is great fun. It's got loads of problems. But the Palio di Siena is this ancient medieval horse race that they hold in the main square in Siena twice a year, and it's completely bonkers.
Yeah, it looked carnage.
It is carnage. When I was there, it was 36 degrees. You're stood in the middle of this square for hours on end. There's no way out once you're in. It's an endurance test. It's crazy. Noise everywhere, fireworks going off, sort of weird mortars exploding at random. It was just completely bonkers, but really fantastic, and massively recommend it to people. I think if I could do any trip, it would be, I would love to go to Mauritius and do racing. I think that'd be fantastic. But also I really like the idea of going to obscure places. I saw a while back a photo series of racing in Senegal. And I thought, well, that would be a blast. If you want to one-up people by saying you've been racing to obscure places, I think Senegal's going to definitely do the trick. Apparently it's a very nice place as well, but winter sunshine. Pete, how about you? What is top of the trips you have done, and what would you most like to do for a racing bucket list trip?
You're very exciting, exotic places you guys have been to, isn't it? It puts me in the shade here in terms of what I've done. I think the best place I've been to was Santa Anita. outstanding, beautiful race course, great racing. It's very Seabiscuity, if you like Seabiscuit everywhere. So it's not original, but it's the best place I've been to. Internationally, I've written down here a couple of things locally, or domestically, I should say, that I would recommend. One of which is going to Fakenham Racecourse with your dog, particularly if you've got a black Labrador like I have, because you'd fit right in. That is great fun, going up to Fakenham. Lots of local foods and good vibe up there. And I asked my wife Tina as well what she thought, and she recommended the Salisbury August meeting during the bank holiday. Not bank holiday, summer holidays. That's a really good one in terms of domestic venues. Where would I like to go? Oh, if I had the choice of going anywhere, well, I mean, I'm a person like James. I love the idea of going to Japan. So I think any racing in Japan, frankly, and I'd like to be one of those people at the front of the gates that runs in as well. I'd like to experience that. You know, when they open the gates and they all flood in together.
You've got to make sure you go to the right meeting, Pete, and it's not just a regular meeting and no one else is running in.
Yeah, but I'd win that one, wouldn't I?
You'd get the best spot.
Stretches at the gate, yeah. I think if I could have the choice of doing that, who do I ask at the Racing Post about going to Japan? Who do I write to about that?
Certainly not me, Pete, anyways, that's for sure. But if you at home are thinking about your racing holidays for the coming year, you simply have to include the Cheltenham Festival on your itinerary. And we are running a competition to win a couple of tickets to the Cheltenham Festival. All you have to do is place a bet to qualify on the Racing Post app. Details are here. Welcome back. That's just about all we've got time for this week. It only remains for me to determine what is going on our front page this week. And I think it's got to be the launch of Premier Racing. It's certainly not been a bells and whistles launch. Nobody has been blown away just yet. But this is the biggest change to British racing in many years, arguably since the introduction of Champions Day. And it is done in direct response to some of the problems facing the sport. So whether or not it is currently all singing and dancing, it nonetheless marks a very important moment for the sport, and we hope we'll see over the coming months Premier Racing taking flight and really making a difference for British racing. That's all we've got time for this week. Many, many thanks to my panel, James Stevens. Thanks for coming in, James. And to Peter Scargill. Most of all, thank you to you at home for tuning in. Please do join us again next week for more discussion on the front page.